Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I believe that teachers are the most important element for that transformation. And so on this podcast, we explore what it looks like to make that happen. And I share things that I've learned on my journey. I share cool things that I've seen other people do. And I share some of the mistakes and some tips and tricks and frameworks and all kinds of stuff on this journey toward a more creative classroom. So today's topic doesn't initially seem to be about creativity, right? It's about metacognition, thinking about thinking. But the reality is that that's very meta, man. The reality is that metacognition is one of those incredibly important elements for helping students with creative work and helping empower them to own their learning. So I want to think through this together and share the five ways to boost metacognition in the classroom. We live in an era where robotics and artificial intelligence will replace many of our current jobs. Global connectivity will continue to allow companies to outsource labor to other countries, and our students will probably change jobs every 5 to 7 years. That's what a lot of the research is suggesting. The corporate ladder that we once had is gone, and in its place is a complex maze. Students will inhabit a world of constant and perpetual change. But how do we help students navigate that maze? We often hear that our current students will work in jobs that don't exist right now. But here's another reality. Our current students will be the ones that create those jobs. Now don't get me wrong. Not every student is going to create the next Google or Pixar or Lyft. Some students will be engineers or artists or accountants or teachers or social workers or lawyers. And some will work in technology, others in traditional corporate spaces, and others in social and civic spaces. Some of them are going to be in high-skilled manufacturing. But no matter how diverse their industries may be, our students will someday face this common reality. They will need to be able to navigate that maze. And that means that they will have to be self-directed. And for me, self-directed is one part being a self-starter, being someone who knows how to take initiative and jump to a task and just do it. It also means being a self-manager, being able to look at your own progress, being able to control things, kind of that self-control aspect as well. And so with that in mind, it's important to help students develop metacognition. Metacognition happens when students analyze tasks, set goals, implement strategies, reflect on what they're learning. It's when they do all of that. And again, that will help them to develop into self-directed learners. And again, that means being both that self-starter and self-manager. And if you think about it this way, you've probably met people that are one but not the other, right? The self-starter, they know how to get things started, but they don't know how to finish their work. They're hopping from project to project. They're always dreaming up new things, but there's no real follow-through. And then you probably know people who are self-managers but not self-starters. Those are the people who will say, just tell me what I need to do. Just tell me what I'm supposed to do, and I'll follow it. They are the perpetual administrators. But what we're talking about is being both. And that requires a deep development of metacognition. Now, people debate about which subjects will prepare kids for the future, whether it's engineering or coding or philosophy. I've even mentioned before that I think journalism is vital for the future. But I love this idea about thinking about the future. This is something my good friend AJ Giuliani mentioned, and he says, our job as teachers is not to prepare kids for something. Our job is to help kids learn to prepare themselves for anything. And that right there, that preparing yourself for anything, that's why I think metacognition is so important. We get wrapped up around preparing kids for the future. Will they need this skill or that skill? Will they have this skill? Will they figure out how to do this or that? But the idea here is that we're not just saying these are the skills kids need for the future. What we're saying is the big skill that they need, the overarching skill, is the ability to learn, to be flexible, to think critically, to manage projects. All of that is connected to this idea of metacognition. And again, that is why metacognition is so incredibly crucial. When students have strong metacognition skills, they're able to anticipate change and navigate complexity. But that doesn't always happen. I mean, you would think that that's just something that people figure out, but it's really not. According to a Pasquarella and Terenzini study, one of the most significant challenges college students face is managing their own learning. In fact, if you think about the freshmen who drop out of college, and it's a real problem. One of the biggest reasons why freshmen drop out is that they can't handle the freedom of this new environment. And not only that, they can't handle setting deadlines, monitoring their own progress. They struggle with basically managing their own time. But a lot of that comes down to that lack of metacognition. But it goes beyond college. We know it's vital for their career. Again, it's what they'll need in order to navigate that maze. But I would say it goes beyond even just success in college and career. If we want kids to become lifelong learners, people who geek out on the subject, people who are critical thinking, democratic citizens, well then they'll also need to know how to own their learning. And if they're going to own their learning, they will have to be self-directed. I love the way that the authors of How Learning Works put it. To become self-directed learners, students must learn to assess the demands of a task, evaluate their own knowledge and skills, plan their approach, monitor their progress, and adjust the strategies as needed. And they present something that's really cool. They have this metacognition cycle, and I want to get into this. There's a sketch video I created. So if you're presenting this to a staff, or maybe even if you want to share it with students, there is a sketch video. Please go to spencervideos.com. You'll see it. It's the metacognition cycle. And it's based on this book that I read that I really love. It's called How Learning Works. And again, love this concept. They looked at the research on metacognition from multiple different ones. Then they ultimately landed on this cycle that they developed that explores this idea of being self-directed and having and developing this metacognition. So again, you can find it at spencervideos.com. If you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, please consider doing that. That might be something so that you can get those videos as they come in. You'll get a little alert in your email every time I post a new sketch video. But here's how the cycle works. It starts with the ability to assess the task at hand. Here, students have a clear picture of what they need to accomplish. Now, this might sound easy, but it goes beyond simply reading instructions. It has to do with the ability to integrate prior knowledge with a new knowledge of a task and making these connections between direct instruction and new tasks. Now, if you see that student who doesn't even know where to get started, chances are they're struggling in this first part, this very first part of the cycle, which is to assess the task. Now, once they've assessed the task, they move to the second phase where they evaluate their strengths and weaknesses. And here they should have a clear sense of what they know and what they don't know. And that will help them as they move along the task. Often students who are highly skilled will suffer imposter syndrome, and they will underestimate their abilities, and that is a real problem. But on the other hand, you have this Dunning-Kruger effect where students overestimate their skills when their skill level is actually really low. So again, the first phase seems easy, right? Just looking at a task and figuring out what to do, but that can be hard for kids who struggle with breaking down tasks. The second phase can be a struggle because students don't always know what they're good at and what they're not good at. And then there's the third one. And this third phase is where they plan out their approach. This requires them to visualize what they're going to do and how they're going to get there. And it's interesting that experts tend to spend more time planning and novices spend less time planning. But then the novices experience more initial mistakes. And so this can be hard for students who want to just jump into a task without planning. But the idea here is that actually, if you are more advanced, if you are really good, you will actually spend some time planning. And that's a normal part of it. And the planning, again, can be a detailed plan. It can be an annotated sketch of what they're going to create. It could be a project plan. But it could also be something as simple as just visualizing it and imagining it and picturing in your head what it will look like. Now, when that's done, they take action. This is where they're going to, you know, begin to actually apply these strategies, and they're going to monitor their progress. Now the myth about this is that you have to stop what you're doing to think about how you're doing. But the goal here is that you are monitoring and adjusting as you work. So you're not necessarily stopping to do a self-assessment or anything like that. You're kind of doing a pulse check as you go, and that you are pivoting, you're moving around, and you're figuring out what you're doing. So again, the cycle thus far is that students start out with assessing a task. They then look at their strengths and weaknesses. They plan out their approach, and now they are applying the strategies. Now, once they've done that, they move to a place where they reflect and they figure out what they need to do and if they need to change their process as a result. This is where they figure out the adjustments, and often that leads back again in the cycle to reassessing the necessary tasks, strengths and weaknesses, and this cycle goes on and on and on. Now, effective problem solvers tend to be the ones who do the best at highlighting what's working, fixing what's failing, and doing this last phase. There's actually been some fascinating research from NASA on this particular thing about what it takes to be good at monitoring and adjusting. But the idea is that you want kids to develop strengths in every area of this metacognition cycle. And as you can see, if you're doing design thinking, you can see how this fits in with the launch cycle, right? Thinking through the tasks fits really well with the ideation process. Monitoring and adjusting fits really well in the revision and testing aspect, you know, the highlight and fix area. The initial awareness of look, listen, and learn and asking questions, well, that fits in perfectly with the first part of the metacognition cycle. So I see these actually going hand in hand and really fitting in nicely with design thinking. All right, so that's the theoretical side. That's the big picture. But what does it mean to actually do this? All right, here are five ideas for boosting metacognition in the classroom. Number one, use a gradual release approach. Metacognition is a natural part of the learning process, but students often need additional support to see what metacognitive thinking actually looks like. And so this is where you can model the thinking process and walking students through the process verbally, asking them to visualize it with you, giving them some kind of, for lack of a better term, scripts to use that you would hold on to. And you want to make it as explicit as possible. You might do this in small groups or one-on-one as well. I've seen teachers do a phenomenal job with providing scaffolding such as sentence stems and graphic organizers. I saw one teacher walking them through the process, showing the metacognition cycle, and sort of walking through it visually and saying, this is what I'm doing. Turn to your neighbor and tell them how that's working. And it was really cool. She made it incredibly explicit, incredibly visual, and took about 20 minutes to do that. Now, that might seem like a waste of time, right? Spending 20 minutes just going over the cycle. But then she walked them through the cycle several more times. And the crazy part is that it didn't take too long before kids were actually using these processes on their own, and they were running with it. And by the end of the year, this teacher had amazing metacognition happening in her class. And they were so much more self-directed. Now, I kind of think of it this way. It was a big investment early on in the year where she was taking 20 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 10 minutes there. But it paid off dividends at the very end of the year when her students were so self-directed, they just got to work. Number two is to integrate self-assessment into your learning. So the idea here is that students figure out what they already know, the prior knowledge, what they don't know, the areas of improvement, what they want to master or their goals, and what they will do to improve. So again, what they already know, what they don't know, what they want to master, and what they will do to improve. Those four key areas. And the more they own this in self-assessment, the better off they'll be. Self-assessments might include self-reflection questions or surveys. They might do diagnostic rubrics and checklists. They might annotate their own work and take notes on what they're doing well and what they need to improve on. But self-assessment can also include peer assessment. This is a chance to go through kind of a critical fringe structure. I've mentioned this tons of times on here, but we have the 20-minute peer feedback system that you can download for free. We've done the See, Think, Wonder or 3-2-1 structures, feedback carousels. By the way, there's an assessment toolkit you might want to check out that has all of this. But the goal is to help students walk their way through all of this. And through that process of walking through all of it, they build up their self-assessment. So you have all of these different assessments that you can use, and you're not stopping to take an assessment. That's the critical part. You're assessing in the moment. You're assessing in the midst of a project, in the midst of an assignment. And all of this, as you can see, this self-assessment, it's going to build up every part of this metacognition process, right? If they have a clear sense of what they're doing, they can then assess the task better. If they have a good sense of their strengths and weaknesses, then they can evaluate strengths and weaknesses. If they are looking closely at their progress, well, then they are able to apply strategies, reflect on it, and monitor and adjust. So number two, again, was integrate self-assessment into what you're doing. Number three is one of the simplest ones, and it doesn't take any time. It's to practice visualization. Now, we know that visualization is a critical part of metacognition, and it's also a critical part of executive functioning skills. You might simply ask students to start the class period by visualizing what they'll do and what it will look like when they're done. And it helps them with that whole idea of developing a plan and monitoring their progress that's part of metacognition. I saw a teacher who used this amazing strategy where she would actually have kids do this visualization process day by day, but she would also have them do this for longer projects, and they would develop long-term metacognition, which was really cool. She had butcher paper. She wasn't a butcher. I don't think she ever butchered anything. But she had butcher paper, and she would put these have students put pictures for each day showing what they were going to do that day and what it would look like. It was really cool to watch her students take ownership of this project management process and build up the ability to visualize their learning. Now, these students were special ed, and they were at a younger grade level, but their ability to task analyze and their ability to plan and to monitor was phenomenal. And so it was a really cool visualization strategy that you might want to check out. Now, if you don't have a lot of space on your walls, just roll the butcher paper up, and then you have them roll it back over the table to just have them look at their progress. Then they can roll it back up. It doesn't take very much time, and it's a cool way to get them to practice visualizing in a way that makes it explicit and concrete and visual. All right, number four is to incorporate project management, which I got into in the last example of visualization. But the goal is to have them engage in project management. And project management involves goal setting, breaking down tasks, implementing strategies, monitoring, adjusting. And you notice project management, those four components of project management, if you're doing that regularly, that fits in perfectly with the metacognition cycle. Number five is to allow mistakes and reward risk-taking. And this is the idea that students will develop metacognition when they know that they're allowed to make mistakes. There's a lot of interesting research connecting metacognition and the growth mindset. And those two kind of work in tandem, that when students are able to honestly look at their strengths and weaknesses, when they're honestly able to look at what they're doing that needs to be improved, and when they can honestly walk away from a mistake and try a new strategy, they are developing that growth mindset. So you want them to be developing that, right? But that doesn't happen in a high stakes environment. If kids turn something in and they get a zero, or not a zero, but they get a C and they can't improve it, then they're not going to take risks. If they never get a chance to revise and improve their work, then they're not going to take risks. So we as educators have to create environments where risk-taking is encouraged and where mistakes are allowed. And some of it is to move toward mastery-based grading, to allow students to revise their work and improve it and resubmit until they get a higher grade. A part of it is to model risk-taking as an educator. A part of it is to give them time to revise. But the goal is that the more that you allow for mistakes and risk-taking, the better off you will be in terms of helping them to develop metacognition. So I just want to point out that these are the key components of metacognition, and those are a few of the strategies needed. The bottom line is this: if we want students to be independent, self-directed learners, if we want them to own their learning, if we want them to navigate that maze, we will need them to develop metacognitive skills. And so the more we incorporate these strategies into our lessons, the more we integrate them into our units, the better off we will be, and the more likely students will grow into those kids who can someday navigate the maze. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy it at all, would you consider leaving a review on iTunes or Stitcher? Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.